Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Welcome back, one and all, to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And here we are again, launching into another week. Started out this week, this morning, at Denver Bible Church, Children's Sunday School. I think they call it Children's Church, but I don't know. That doesn't roll off the tongue as eloquently as Sunday school. Anyway, I'm teaching the kiddos in Sunday school. And let me just a bit of advice for any of you laymen out there, the average Joe. If you're ever asked to come into church and preach or teach or give a lecture, fill in, maybe your pastor's sick, he calls you up, hey, can you come and help me out? I can't make it. I have some advice for you. Just grab the Bible and open it up to the very first page and just start reading. Because you can't go wrong. Anyway, we spent 40 minutes at the Children's Sunday School this morning. And we got through Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 through verse 5. Not chapter 5, verse 5. So we spent 40 minutes on 5 verses in Genesis. It was awesome. I made it clear to the children, and I'm going to make it clear to you people right now, a relatively unknown truth, even in the halls of most churches, even in the pulpits, even in the seminaries, it's relatively unknown that God is not a magician. And everything he did at the creation can be explained by the scientific method. And I told that to the kids, and some of the kids seemed to think that God had magic. And I said, no, God doesn't have magic. God has a lot of power, but he's not a magician. And they asked me, can God do anything? And I said, no, God can't do anything. And a couple of them were a little bit surprised. But I went on to explain that there are certain things God can't do, like God cannot call evil good. And, well, that made perfect sense to everybody. But we had a great time. So we're going through we'll be teaching at the Denver Bible Church, Children's Sunday School. We're going to be teaching through the book of Genesis for the next few weeks. And I would like to invite most pastors and seminary instructors to come and sit in on this class. Although you might want to bring a friend because it might be a little bit over your head. Anyway, you may not be familiar with my assertion that 99.5% of all pastors are not qualified. Is that it? No, 95%. I'm sorry. I was being a little less generous than I usually am. 95% of all pastors teaching in Christian churches today are not qualified to do so. And that's one of the reasons we're losing the civilization. In fact, I would assert that it's the main reason that we're losing the civilization is unqualified people teaching people things about God that are not true. It's a big problem. But anyway, it's not happening at Denver Bible Church, at least in the Children's Sunday School. Now, I already know what goes on in the main sanctuary. I know that my pastor, Bob, he's got everything under control in there. And if half the pastors in the nation would come and sit through a Sunday school at Denver Bible Church, we could probably save America. But anyway, it was a good time. A good time was had by all. Oh, yes, I have to do a couple of corrections. From last week's broadcast, when I was discussing the Marine Corps blood stripe for the non-commissioned officer, I made a couple of mistakes because I'm a little rusty. It's been a while. It's been a little while since I put on the Marine Corps uniform, and I made a couple. First of all, I said that the blood stripe ran down the inseam of the dress blue slacks. And in that statement alone, I made two significant errors. Number one, the blood stripe runs down the outside leg seam, not the inseam. The inseam goes from the crotch to the inside, down to the bottom on the inside. That wouldn't make any sense. It runs down the side from the hip all the way down on the outside pant leg seam there. And the second thing I did was I called them slacks. And I didn't think about this at the time. But later that night, as I was drifting off to bed, drifting off to sleep, I should say, in bed, I had a vision go through my head that seared into my memory of drill instructor Sergeant Isham hearing the word slacks when I was in boot camp. One of the privates, one of the recruits. We weren't even allowed to call each other privates. We were recruits. One of the recruits said, "Drill instructor Staff Sergeant Isham, I'm having a problem with my slacks." And Sergeant Isham jumped up over the top bunk and said, "Slacks! Slacks! Who said slacks? Come here, you little maggot. Slacks, you little sissy. Girls wear slacks. Marine Corps recruits wear trousers." And from then on, we all knew that we didn't wear slacks. But see, I'm a slimy civilian now. I'm a fat, slack civilian. I had forgotten that United States Marine Corps recruits and NCOs wear trousers, you mealy-mouthed maggot. Anyway, I had forgotten that. I apologize to drill instructor Sergeant Isham. Did I say staff sergeant? Okay. I didn't want to promote him, although he probably. Anyway, drill instructor Sergeant Isham was about 5'4". He weighed about 125 pounds, and he could whip any three men that you know in a fist fight. He was a terrifying individual. He was sprightly and thin and wiry, and he could jump over a rack. I mean over the top bunk and land on the other side and catch you doing whatever it is you thought that he didn't see you doing. So to drill instructor Sergeant Isham, I issue an official apology, and I say good night to Chesty Puller wherever you are. All right, now we'll move on with the broadcast. We're going to go immediately into the politics file. We're going to go to, let's see, Donald Trump has reared his ugly head, although he's got a fairly good-looking head. I mean, the hair is, you know, that's a bit questionable. But, hey, it's his thing, whatever. So Donald Trump, let's see now, he was meeting with a group of black pastors up in New York, according to the Associated Press, where he had expected them to endorse him. This was last Monday. So Trump was expecting his first major endorsement of his campaign to be from a group of black pastors, but it turns out while they had planned to endorse him, something happened and they decided not to. They did allow him to address their confab, whatever they were having there, but they did not issue the endorsement that Trump had hoped for. And the Associated Press reports that many of the religious leaders invited to meet and greet with Donald Trump were surprised that the gathering was being advertised by his campaign as an endorsement. After they objected, the Trump campaign decided to keep the meeting private and quietly cancel the press conference they were going to hold afterwards. Now, what does Trump have to say about this revoked endorsement, or whatever you want to call it? Trump says, quote, "Probably some of the Black Lives Matter folks called them up and said you shouldn't be meeting with Trump, blah, blah, blah." So that's what Donald Trump thinks, that he was undermined by the Black Lives Matter folks, just black leftists in general. But I hope that's not the case. No, I hope that many of these black pastors, Christian ministers, I hope they pointed out to one another that Donald Trump is, well, he's an immoral, unrepentant sinner who says he's never asked God for forgiveness for anything. And so they can't endorse him, well, because he's an unrepentant liberal. How about that, Don? That's the only reason I can't endorse Trump. I know he's a pro-abort liberal. And would America be better under Donald Trump than under, who's the president now? Barry Obama? Would America be better? Well, I really don't know. It's hard to say. I think we need a much more principled man in the White House than either Barack Obama or Donald Trump or Hank Clinton, Hillary Clinton. We need a better man than any three of them, in my opinion. Hillary being the manliest among them. But I think we need a much more moral person. And I don't think Donald Trump was undermined by leftist civil rights hucksters or Black Lives Matter people. I think all these pastors probably looked around at each other and said, well, wait a second. This guy, come on. We can't endorse this guy. Don, we can't endorse you. You don't have any moral underpinnings or any values. You're a money guy. What? You built casinos. Oh, well. Is that how you made your fortune? Building casinos and hotels. Okay. Well, that's why I don't think they endorsed him. Not to put too fine a point on it. I'll move on. We go from the war. From the politics file. Immediately we go into the war file, where CNN is reporting a rather ironic statement that Barack Obama made just before the horrific terrorist attacks in San Bernardino, California. Obama recorded an interview in Paris on Wednesday night prior to the San Bernardino terror attacks. The Christmas party massacre is what I choose to call it. Even though the government workers there who were hosting it, they weren't allowed to call it a Christmas party. They had to call it a holiday party. That's how it was reported in the British press. Workers were attending a holiday party. But we all know it was a Christmas party. Because for my whole life and my dad's whole life and my grandfather's whole life, we had Christmas parties. It's only in the last few years that we've started to have holiday parties. And I choose not to participate in the devolution of the vernacular. It's a Christmas party. That's what it was. And so Barry, he's sitting in Paris exhaling carbon dioxide into the air as he taped an interview Wednesday night. Ironically, it began airing Thursday as the attacks in San Bernardino were occurring. And here's what Barry said from Paris. He said, quote, ISIL will not pose an existential threat to us. The American people should feel confident that we are going to be able to defend ourselves and have a good holiday and go about our lives. His comments began to air, as I said, the AP reports, as the FBI was beginning to investigate reports of an attack in San Bernardino. And oddly enough, as reports began to surface that the FBI is investigating ISIS sympathizers all over the country. Yeah. So what did Barry do? In addition to ensuring that we were not going to be attacked, as we were being attacked, he did promise that he would put no boots on the ground in the fight against ISIS. And by that, he doesn't actually mean no boots, he said. It's not that he does. He means no battalions. So he basically told our enemy that we will not send anything larger than a company-sized force. No battalions, he said. He literally said no battalions. What else? No boots on the ground. We will not be attacked. Of course, then we were attacked. The White House announced in October that Barry has authorized less than 50 Special Forces troops to deploy against ISIS in Syria. Less than 50. Anyway, so that there's the state of the war. We have a completely, well, do I have more on this? Because Barry was not only delusional before and during the attack, but he's delusional in the hours right after the attack. I've got a report here from CBS in Los Angeles. After the dust had cleared and the bodies had settled out in San Bernardino, the president actually said, we have a pattern now of mass shootings in this country that has no parallel anywhere else in the world, unquote. He had just left Paris. He had just left Paris where the exact same type of attack just happened less than two weeks before. So the president is either delusional or he is on drugs. And I would not be surprised. I'm not going to make a prediction, but I would not be surprised if he is not arrested by military intelligence or intelligence community commanders any day. Thank you. Yes, imagine yourself waking up early one morning and seeing some obscure figure from the CIA and some general you never heard of standing on the left and the right side of Joe Biden telling us that we've arrested the president because we found out he's a traitor and we're going to have to swear in this moron because while he's a bumbling fool, as far as we know, he's not actively aiding and abetting the enemy against us, as far as we know. All right. Now, what would make me think or suspect that our president could possibly be, either willingly or through utter incompetence, aiding and abetting our enemies? Well, one of the things is what his attorney general said. Within minutes after the San Bernardino attackers were identified as whatever they were, Farid Farouk, Mohammed Nazim Farouk, what was it? I can't remember his name. Ahmed Farouk, something like that, and Tashneen, whatever. Anyways, they were identified as Muslims, all right? As soon as it became obvious, you couldn't stop Loretta Lynch, the attorney general. The day after, this is according to the Daily Wire, Attorney General Loretta Lynch pledged to a group of Muslim activists that she would take aggressive action against anyone who used anti-Muslim rhetoric that edges toward violence, unquote, is what she said. She was speaking at the Muslim Advocates 10th anniversary dinner, where the Attorney General of the United States, in the wake of the worst terrorist attack on American soil since Major Nidal Hassan shouted Allahu Akbar and started gunning down his fellow soldiers at Fort Hood, in the wake of all this, she says her greatest fear is the incredibly disturbing rise of anti-Muslim rhetoric. That's her greatest fear. Her greatest fear should be being shot to death by terrorists who would give almost anything to kill governing officials in America. I think that's what Lynch and Barry and the other suicidal idiot children don't understand, is that these people they sympathize with, they would do anything to kill them, which is an indication that they're all crazy or they're on drugs. Let's see here. What else does Loretta Lynch have to say that makes me suspect that at the very least, their sympathy for the devil is getting us into putting us in harm's way. And at very worst, they're actually, in cahoots. I'm going to say it. They could actually be in cahoots with the enemy. I know I sound like a crazy person, but these are crazy times. Who would have ever thought that ragtag third world backwards nobodies could send terror teams or activate terror teams in America to shoot up Christmas parties and army bases and recruiting stations? These are crazy times. It's making me crazy. It makes me lay in bed at night thinking it's possible that the president is a traitor. I'm sorry. I wonder. I think about it. I hope somebody's investigating the possibility. I've probably said something that could get me arrested. That's okay. I could use the publicity, frankly. The show would be a lot bigger if I got arrested. Well, I'd get out right away. You just post bail and, you know. Anyway, back to Loretta Lynch. This is the Attorney General, the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the United States. She says, quote, "When we talk about the First Amendment, we must make clear that actions predicated on violent talk are not American." What do you mean, Loretta? Well, first of all, Loretta, America was founded by men who acted on violent talk. The country was founded in rebellion and violent talk. Speeches were given. Barrooms full of men were whipped up into a frenzy, and British soldiers were attacked and killed. So violent talk is, it's all American. It's, anyway, what are actions predicated on violent talk? That's very Orwellian. It's vague enough that, well, it could cause them to come and arrest a guy like me. And I'm just telling you my suspicions and fears. I'm not encouraging anyone to do anything to the president except investigate whether or not this guy is on the other side. That's all. What else did she say about actions predicated on violent talk? She said they are not who we are. That's Loretta Lynch. At which point, normal, logical, sensible Americans said, well, really, Loretta, who are we now? Who are we? Barry always talks about our common shared values. He always talks about that. But I don't have any shared values with Barack Obama. I don't know. We may like the same style of barbecue. Maybe he prefers a St. Louis dry rub over Memphis. Maybe. We could agree on that, but that's probably the only common value I share with Barack Obama. Who are we now? Do we have common values? We really don't anymore. We used to be, we could all gather around the flag and the national anthem and Sunday school and Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving and baseball. And there were things that we had common values. But do we have that anymore? I don't think we have that anymore. I mean, I know I don't have that with Loretta Lynch. When she says they are not who we are, well, hey, Loretta, I am not with you, okay? Whatever side you're on, I want to go way over there on the other side. Don't want to be too close to you, Loretta. I'm not with you. Let's see. Later on at the same press conference, she termed the San Bernardino shootings, quote, a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful moment to really make significant change. That's your attorney general. She's not mine. And if you're listening to the show, she's probably not yours either, or at least you wish she wasn't. A wonderful opportunity and a wonderful moment to really make significant change. Very Rahm Emanuel-like. Never let a crisis go to waste. Who was that originally? Was that Saul Alinsky originally? Or was it? That's not Rahm Emanuel's original. Now, I think the originator on that was Nimrod. Yeah, about 4,500 years ago. Never let a crisis go to waste. And Alinsky picked it up from him. All right. Now, more from the War File. CBS in Los Angeles also reports that a man who had been working in the area of the Redlands townhouse of the two Muslim terrorists. There were two Muslim terrorists who lived downstairs, a husband and a wife and their six-month-old baby. And I forget if it was her mom or his mom lived upstairs. So as a family, they knew each other. They lived with their mother-in-law. But let me report what CBS in L.A. reported. A man who had been working in the area near the Redlands home of the two terrorists and the mother-in-law said he had noticed half a dozen or more Middle Eastern men in the area in recent weeks. but he decided not to report anything since he did not wish to racially profile those people. So you've got a normal American guy. He notices something suspicious. He thinks he should probably say something. He wonders, maybe I should say something. This looks odd. But because we're now living in a much more Orwellian construct than existed even in the Soviet Union, he was unable to bring himself to do the right thing because, well, of the aforementioned Orwellian construct that we all live in. The amount of control that the government exerts on the average American person without them even trying anymore because of the environment that they've created, it's something that would make Leonid Brezhnev blush. He never had that kind of control over the Russian people. It's unbelievable. And as a matter of fact, I saw on television CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Before the bodies were even cold, CARE has a press conference, and two of their spokesmouths get up on stage and issue a bunch of platitudes. A bunch of platitudes about how they feel terrible that this has happened. We feel for every person who has been hurt or lost their life. We pray for the victims in this terrible event that has happened. And then they grabbed the guy's brother-in-law, Syed Farouk. I believe it was his brother-in-law. It was a family member for sure. They put him in front of the microphone and he has the same platitude. I am so terribly shocked. I cannot believe that this terrible thing has happened to these people. I am so sorry for the people who have lost their life. I feel shocked and terrible. And when the press realized, there's a press conference. So when the press realized that this is a family member of one of the terrorists, they started launching questions. Like 10 of them at once said, did you know? Did you hear? Did you see? What do you know? And he puts up his hand. I do not wish to say anything. I do not wish to answer any questions. And then the CARE spokesmouth, he steps in between the microphone and the brother-in-law, holds up his hand to the press. He does not wish to issue any statement or answer any questions. We just all feel terrible about this horrible situation that has happened and for all the people who have lost their life or been hurt. At which point, I was sitting on the couch, I'm saying, how is it that the sheriff doesn't grab a family member of the terrorist for crying out loud? I would think that the authorities would want to talk to everybody who knows this guy, especially his family members. But I don't know, the CARE guys, they marched off the stage, and as far as I know, they got into a Lexus and drove to wherever with a family member of one of the terrorists, and nobody stopped them. And said, well, wait a minute, we don't care if you don't want to speak or you don't want to answer questions. We're going to ask you some questions, and if we have to detain you and take you down to the station, that's what we're going to do. But apparently, I'm living in a bizarro world. Is it any wonder that I'm suspicious of my own president, that he could be a traitor? That he could have more than just sympathy for our enemies? I mean, maybe I'm losing my mind. Maybe I'm crazy to think, but I mean, crazy things are happening. It's bizarre. I cannot relate to where we are right now. I mean, this is World War III, folks, and it's not going to be like in the past. It's not going to be their soldiers against our soldiers on a battlefield or in some far-off city. It's going to be their civilians against our civilians in our movie theaters, in our sporting events, in our shopping malls, in our cafes. This is what it's going to look like, and intelligence is going to be the key to victory in a battle that is executed in this manner, and it seems that we've lost our minds in not arresting everybody this guy knew and allowing his brother-in-law to walk off the stage in the arms of CARE, who are obviously supporters of the Islamic Jihad. And, you know, maybe I'm crazy, but I'm more afraid that the country's being run and put in serious jeopardy by people who are seriously deranged. And just to be clear, ladies and gentlemen, yes, I know. Thank you, boys. Yes, we do need to wake up. I agree with that. Thank you. Thank you, boys, he said, acknowledging the efforts of his extremely attractive audio engineer. Now, what was I saying? I'm distracted. Oh, I'm back. Is that it? We're back? Okay. So I just want to make very clear that I am not calling on anyone to do anything to the president, certainly not, except investigate him. I think we need members of military intelligence keeping their eyes on Barack Obama and the girl junta that's destroying the country, running the country out of the West Wing of the White House after midnight. It's very suspicious indeed. We have the war file, but within the war file, we now have a how to lose a war file. This is a subfile of the war file here at the Weekly Worldview. And this is a story out of the Washington Post. They report that Iraqis think the United States is in cahoots with the Islamic State. That's right. Iraqi fighters, not this isn't just Iraqi civilians, you know, sitting up and smoking hookahs too late into the night and having conspiracy theory talk. These are Iraqi fighters. They say they've all seen videos purportedly showing the U.S. helicopters airdropping weapons to the militants, and many claim they have friends and relatives who have witnessed similar instances of collusion with the enemy. And so for anyone to assume that the United States is on the side of ISIS, I don't think it's total insanity, because we have been dropping weapons and smuggling weapons to Islamists starting in the days of the Libyan conflict over there in Benghazi and before. We have been arming Islamic militants in the Middle East, so I can see why a lot of the folks in Iraq think that we are on the side of the Islamic radical terrorists, seeing as how we have been arming them and giving them beans, bullets, and bandages. It's widely believed among Iraqis that the United States is actually supporting the Islamic State for a variety of reasons. They all have their suspicions. One guy, Mustafa Saadi, he's a commander of one of the Shiite militias there in Iraq who is fighting against ISIS. He's one of the other Islamic fanatics fighting against the Islamic fanatics in ISIS. And this commander says, he says, the Islamic State is almost finished. They are weak. If only America would stop supporting them, we could defeat them in days, says the Shiite fanatic, as we've been arming the Sunni fanatics. U.S. military officials, according to the Post, say the charges are too far-fetched to even merit a response. How could you even think that we're on the side of ISIS? By golly, that doesn't even rate a response. But let me go ahead and respond. That's beyond ridiculous, said, who is this, one of the survivors of Barry's military purge, Colonel Steve Warren. I guarantee you, anyone in the military who holds a rank above Lieutenant Colonel today is a total mouthpiece for Barack Obama. He's completely controlled by Obama. He can't say anything against Obama, anyone who's a bird colonel or higher, because all the real military leaders, all the real brass was purged out about 3-4 years ago. The purge was concluded. But Barry's purge surviving spokesmouth, Colonel Steve Warren, he says, there's clearly no one in the West who buys that idea, but unfortunately, this is something that a segment of the Iraqi population believes for some crazy reason. Maybe it's the videos of all of our helicopters dropping weapons and supplies to terrorists. That could be construed as support for terrorists. And seeing as how we have been doing that, and hey, Barry admits he's doing that. John McCain admits doing that. I mean, we are doing that. So I can see how these people could be a bit concerned, and perhaps now you can understand my concerns and where they come from. The new Iraqi prime minister, he pushed back against an announcement Tuesday when the U.S. Defense Secretary said that an expeditionary force of U.S. troops will be dispatched to Iraq to conduct raids. The Prime Minister of Iraq said, well, wait a minute, I'm not so sure I want you people here. I don't think I trust you people. Which side are you on? So Iraq, who George W. Bush thought he was going to ride in there like Thomas Jefferson and turn them into the next great Western democracy. Even the Iraqis don't trust us anymore. They don't know whose side we're on. Let's see here. What does this purge surviving colonel have to say? The Iranians and the Iranian-backed Shiite militias are really pushing this line of propaganda that the United States is supporting ISIS. Now, he says ISIL, but I say ISIS. He says this is all just part of the Iranian propaganda machine. Well, the Iranians wouldn't have such a propaganda machine if they didn't have actual video of actual U.S. military air transport supporting terrorists, factions. I'm sorry, they wouldn't. So that is, forgive us if we're all a bit suspicious, Colonel and Barry and everyone else. All right, I can't take any more of this war news. But I'm not so sure I want to come back to America because it's just, it's horrifying here. I've got the story here reported by Breitbart. This is from our Death of Civilization file. A Chicago woman has been arrested and charged with beating her two-year-old daughter to death. Now, I don't know if this is a Breitbart reporter or who the reporter is, but the way they wrote this, they said that this woman has been charged with beating her two-year-old so badly that the girl later died. And I really don't like it when reporters use language that deflect the guilt of especially a murderer here. This woman beat her daughter to death. The fact that the child survived for a few hours beyond the actual beating, please. I mean, do we have to really be that legalistic about our language? She beat her daughter to death. She was upset that the child would not eat her noodles. Jasmine Jones is 18 years old. That's the mother. She's charged with punching her toddler daughter 4 to 5 times in the stomach. And then she left the injured child with her boyfriend while she went out to buy some marijuana. She told police that she admitted she had hit the child. And she told prosecutors that she had often punched the girl as a form of corporal punishment. So here's, can you even relate to this person, people? Can any of us even relate? This is a level of savagery that exists in the neighborhoods all around us that we cannot even relate to. After she came back from getting her marijuana, she said the girl seemed sick. Later that evening, the boyfriend said that maybe they should take the girl to the hospital. The mother said no. Sometime during the night, the girl perished from internal injuries due to the beating delivered by her own mother. By the time the couple brought the child to the hospital, the child was in full rigor mortis. The woman has a record. Last year, she threw the same child off a balcony and was charged with child abuse. It's just horrifying. It's horrifying that this is the kind of monster that has grown up right here this is in Chicago. I mean, there are civilized people who live in Chicago, work in Chicago every day, normal, decent human beings. And growing up all around us in our midst are monsters and animals that someone decided sometime before I was born, someone decided that we had to tolerate things like this. And there is no end to it except violence, bloodshed, and murder on a massive scale. If the Islamists don't kill us, these mad, violent, monstrous children, they will kill us. Something has to change significantly, ladies and gentlemen. Something has to change significantly. I was driving home late the other night, and I was listening to some Republican hack on the radio who's got a radio show. And he asked the question in regards to the Christmas party massacre in San Bernardino. He said, what is it going to take to stop this? Things seem to be spinning out of control. What is it going to take to stop this? And a voice in my head said, we need to stop killing children. We need to stop killing children. And you may think that that's not related and that I'm a one-issue voter and that's all I care about is abortion. But I'm telling you that until we as a nation or our leadership guides us in the right direction and says we have to stop murdering innocent people in our communities, until that stops, this level of violence and bloodshed and death and hell and murder is going to exponentially increase every year until none of us can escape it. None of us will be able to escape it if we don't stop. My advice to everyone is to take action against wickedness and do it before your own personal physical safety is threatened. Because if we wait until our own personal physical safety is threatened, then the ensuing battle will be catastrophic. And there will be so much death and suffering it's just not necessary that it happened that way. So we, as individuals, have to each change our mind about tolerance for murderers and tolerance for the shedding of innocent blood. And we have to do it before we're forced to do it because we're about to be killed or hurt. Anyway, you know, when World War II was occurring across Europe and Asia, even the Greatest Generation did not act in any significant manner until their own physical, personal safety was threatened. And the horror and bloodshed that ensued from 1941 to 1945 is astonishing on a global scale. And I'm afraid that if this generation acts like that generation did and goes soft and doesn't respond to the murder and the terror and the bloodshed and the killing of innocent people that's occurring, if we wait as they did, then we can expect a similar fate. Except this time, the enemy is not over there. This time, the enemy is within. The enemy is all around us. The enemy is every person who doesn't understand what it means to respect the lives of all people. And that population is growing, and it's festering, and it's up to you and I as individuals. It's up to our leaders to change the hearts and minds of the people by leading them. And most of all, I do believe that it's up to the preacher in the pulpit to prevent the coming catastrophe. I got to come back. Dark clouds are rolling. He's standing out in the rain. No, go ahead. Just a little bit more. Tell me how you feeling about it, Stevie. How you feeling, brother?
Yeah, well, I don't want to keep a rolling. Mine's about to drive home me insane.
See, he's feeling like I am. He's going insane.
Yeah.
It's enough to make a man crazy. Thank you, Stevie. We appreciate it. We do appreciate it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there are still sane people in leadership around the world. It's unfortunately, though, they used to work for KGB. Yeah. Vladimir Putin is perhaps the only sane politician left on the planet. And when things have degenerated to that level, you know we're in trouble. RT is reporting that the Russian Prosecutor General's Office has officially designated George Soros's Open Society Institute and affiliated organizations as undesirable groups, and they have banned Russian citizens and organizations from participating in any of Soros's projects. They called George Soros and his foundation a threat to the foundation of Russia's order and national security, constitutional order and national security. So I'm sorry, when I find myself agreeing with Vladimir Putin more than I agree with my president, I mean, it's enough to drive me insane, okay? Let's see here. So, this is interesting. Once a group is recognized as undesirable by the prosecutor general in Russia, its assets must be frozen, its offices closed, and the distribution of any of its materials must be banned. Now, I happen to agree with this. Because I think people who advocate criminal activity are not exercising free speech. I think that a sensible, logical person knows where to draw the line between free speech and the advocacy of criminal activity, which is what George Soros and all of his organizations do. They advocate that the government steal money from the people who work, give it to people who don't, and legalize all kinds of immoral, destructive behavior. You cannot advocate for the legalization of criminal behavior. And if you do, you should be shut down and all of your papers should be burned. All of your pamphlets and flyers should be burned. You should be arrested and beaten and quite possibly executed, depending on what you're doing. So, the State Department is upset, by the way. The U.S. State Department, according to Fox News, says they're troubled by Russia's decision to ban billionaire Soros's organizations. I have a quote here from Mark Toner, a State Department spokesman, who apparently he's identifying as a man today. They call him a spokesman. But I think since he's working for the State Department, it might be more appropriate to call him a spokesperson, because he could show up at State tomorrow and decide he wants to use the women's bathroom, and who is anyone at State to judge? So State Department spokesperson Mark Toner says today's designation will only further restrict the work of civil society in Russia for the benefit of the Russian people. It's another example of the Russian government's growing crackdown and a deliberate step to further isolate the Russian people from the world. Well, Mr. Toner, I've seen the world. I'm looking at the world. I'm studying what's happening in the world every day. And I want to isolate myself and my family from it as much as possible, because they're all a bunch of insane, suicidal sex perverts. And George Soros is at the vanguard of all of that. And if Vladimir Putin is the only politician with enough brains and common sense to ban George Soros and his pervert, communist, socialist, parasitic organizations that seek to do nothing but sap the power and strength of civilization and suck it all up into George Soros's disgusting, vile universe. Well, if Vladimir Putin's the only one who can do that, well, then we certainly are in a bad spot, not to put it too succinctly. As an example, ladies and gentlemen, from the Culture File, Breitbart reports that Ireland's parliament is busy with reforms to cement the rights of gay people. And I don't mean by that happy people. I don't mean people who are just happy to be here. No, I mean sex perverts. They're working at the Irish Parliament to cement the rights of sex perverts within Irish law. You remember that the Irish Dáil, they legalized homosexual marriage back in the summer. Well, they voted now to unanimously repeal Section 37 of the state's Employment Equality Act. That section granted exemptions for religious organizations, religious educational and medical institutions, so that they wouldn't have to hire fags and other assorted sex perverts. Well, that protection has been voted out unanimously in Ireland, for crying out loud. Removing this section will mean that sex pervert teachers will be free to talk to school students about their personal relationships, even in religious schools. The Irish Minister of State for Equality, the Minister of State for Equality, that right there, the fact that Ireland has a Minister of State for Equality makes me feel like I've fallen backwards into a George Orwell novel. The Minister of State for Equality. He spoke of his pride in bringing the bill to Parliament. He said, "I am proud," he said, as they all got dressed or undressed for the Pride Parade that I'm sure they're all going to attend. The bill, he says, will allow homosexuals and sex perverts to get married without a threat to their job if they work in a religious-run institution. So this means that in Ireland, they're going to force the churches and the religious organizations to hire open, flaming sex perverts. In fact, I have a quote from an open, flaming sex pervert legislator over there in Ireland. In addition to being proud of the bill, we also note where further progress remains to be made for privately funded religious-run institutions. Did you hear what I said there? Now we have to go after the privately funded religious-run organizations. We need to help the trans people, the transgendered, and all of that. So this is only the next act. This hurts me because I'm of Irish descent. Actually, I don't know. McBurney. I believe I'm of Irish. I know my grandmother was Bailey, as Irish as the day is long. But anyway, there's a running debate in our family about whether or not we're Irish or Scottish. Yeah. All the warmongers insist we're Scottish, but the alcoholics insist we're Irish over at the McBurney clan. But we may not be able to settle that without some sort of genetic testing. The man's Irish for sure, then. Because I'm not a man of war. They're about to introduce... wait a second here. Oh, the repeal follows the introduction of Ireland's Gender Recognition Act, which allows people to legally change their gender just by altering their passport. They don't even have to go to the doctor. No hormones, no surgery. They also passed a gay adoption bill that allows homosexual sex perverts to adopt innocent children who never did anything wrong to anybody. Nonetheless, the perverts have signaled that the repeal of the protection for religious organization, that repeal won't be the last of Ireland's reformed to accommodate the lesbians, the gays, the transgender, the bisexuals, and anyone else that we can think of. And we can probably think of more. Because we're drunk as well. All right. So that's Ireland on its way straight to hell in a handbasket. I'm almost out of time and I have all this stuff left. Hold on a second. That means I can only do the really good stories because I'm running out of time. In Jerusalem, archaeologists have uncovered the seal of Hezekiah, king of Judah. Now, this is really cool. The first ever seal impression of an Israelite or Judean king ever exposed in situ in a scientific archaeological excavation. Excavations at the foot of the southern wall of the Temple Mount uncovered an impression of the royal seal of the biblical king Hezekiah, who reigned between 727 and 698 BCE, says the Israel National News. We would say BC, before Christ, but the secular news media says, before the common era, whatever that means. The seal bears an inscription. It says, quote, belonging to Hezekiah, son of Ahaz, king of Judah. And oddly enough, that's exactly how he's identified in the Bible, in the book of Isaiah. Yeah, he's identified as Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, the king of Judah, oddly enough. Very, very cool. It was discovered, by the way, in a garbage dump dated to the time of Hezekiah or shortly thereafter. In a garbage dump. Amazing. Very, very, very cool. All right, what else? The Saudi Arabians say they're going to build the world's largest tower. Right now, the world's, did I say largest? I meant tallest. Right now, the tallest tower is the Burj Khalifa, which is in Dubai. By the way, Burj Khalifa, it stands for the Caliphate Tower. Now, don't be upset or offended by that. It's not like the Muslims want to rule the world politically. I mean, they just named their tallest tower, the tallest tower in the world, they call it the Caliphate Tower. The Caliphate, by the way, is the term Muslims use to define the global government of Islam over the whole world. Well, now the Saudi Arabians say they are going to build a tower 1 kilometer high into the sky, right? What is it with pagans and towers? The pagans have been building towers all the way back to the days of Nimrod, right? Back in the Tower of Babel, they do always fall down. Well, we'll just see about that. I find that ironic that pagans, you know, here in America, we had industrialists, capitalists, free men, many of whom were Christians, and they had a competition amongst each other to build the tallest building, right? But the pagans, they're obsessed with having, and I think that was a healthy competition among, you know, free people spending their own money. But these are pagan, whatever, building their tallest tower. Oh, good luck with that. And while that's happening, we've got other pagan scientists going the other way. We've got ships have left. I'm sorry, they haven't left yet. Well, yeah, they have. Ships have departed from Colombo, Sri Lanka, to head for a spot in the southwestern Indian Ocean known as the Atlantis Bank, where they're going to lower a drill bit and screw it through 1.5 kilometers of rock. They're hoping to come back in the future to then return and finalize a push to drill into the mantle of the Earth, through the crust of the Earth, into the mantle. The crust-mantle boundary is thought to be marked by the Moho discontinuity, and they're hoping to hit that. Now, under the continents, the mantle's down 30 to 60 kilometers, but beneath oceans, it's close enough to be reached with shipborne drilling equipment. And so we got pagans on one side of the planet. They're trying to build the world's tallest tower. We got some other pagans trying to drill a hole down to the mantle of the Earth. I'm not sure that's such a good idea. I don't. Don't be in such a hurry, guys. You're going to make it to the center of the Earth. You don't necessarily have to start drilling right now. Yeah, let's see here. Yeah, I've got, from the science, really, file. Billionaires are pursuing anti-aging and trying to cheat death like never before, according to the Daily Beast. They're working on figuring out how humans can live forever. Yes. And they're writing out million-dollar checks to fund their quest. Listen to some of the billionaires who've laid out money to some of these scientific experiments to try to figure out how to live forever. Peter Thiel, PayPal co-founder, Oracle CEO Larry Ellison, Paul Glenn, a venture capitalist, Napster founder Sean Parker, entrepreneurs Peter Diamandis and Pierre Omidyar. They're the guys behind eBay, Craig Venture. Anyway, all these billionaires and their minions. Hey, you know, rich people, they tend to be highly specialized. And so they can be generally stupid and foolish people, but they still end up rich with a lot of money. And they're considered successful by people who have less money than them. So all these guys, they're considered rich, successful people. But like I say, they're highly specialized, and in general terms, they could be pretty stupid and foolish because you might want to give them a call and say, hey, guys, you're already going to live forever, geniuses. The question is where and with whom. And if you'd like some advice on that, we could help you out right here at the Weekly Worldview. And you could write us a check for $200,000. And we could help point you in the right direction so that if you wanted to make your eternal existence pleasant, we can help you with that. Maybe $300,000. You know, since they do have a lot of money, we want to be fair about it. But they are, in fact, even you, if you're listening in the audience and you're not as rich as, say, Larry Ellison, you are going to live forever, or at least exist forever. And if you'd like it to be pleasant, you need to determine where do you want to go? Who do you want to live with? Do you want to live with the creator and giver of life? Or do you want to declare yourself as God and see how you can do with yourself in the afterlife? Do you want to see how, if you have enough power and knowledge to carry yourself successfully into a pleasant afterlife? Or do you want to go to the author of life and all that is good and wonderful and beautiful? And that person is Jesus Christ. And if you want to get to know him, Mr. Ellison, Peter Thiel, Larry Page over at Google, Pierre Omyadar over at eBay, all you guys, just give me a call. All right, you could call me Collect if people even do that anymore. Skype me, buddy. FaceTime me. I'll point you in the right direction, and I'll do it for relatively less than what you're paying these scientists who are, I don't know, they're going to freeze your eyeballs or your brain or something. I've got a much better program. And we'll return next week, and we'll tell you more about that and everything that's going on with life and the universe and everything and all that. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at American Right to Life, at Theology Online, and, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.